you that I have an anxiety issue?
Buongiorno and welcome to the one, the only, the kind, the creative and the chaotic with me, Kelly Jade, and fan favourite, Wayne Naylor.
Hey.
Can you believe that we're already on our seventh episode?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's kind of mad.
It is. I'm pretty proud of us. We've got a lot to go, but...
Yeah. Just trying to get to that 100.
100?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think by that point we should design our own crowns or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe get the guests to do it.
Do we get like syndication then if we get to 100? And then we just get paid money over all the episodes that we...
I mean... That's the plan, right?
Might have to look into that. Yeah.
And you've met some interesting people so far.
Yeah, I have.
A lot of personalities and different walks of life in the creative world.
It's been really cool. Just sort of getting to see their process and sort of what they're thinking, especially from different perspectives. So yes, it's been interesting.
And the one thing, or the several things that they all have in common is they're all incredibly kind, but they're all quite frustrated at the same time with where they're at or what of certain parts of it.
To be honest with you, I feel like if you're not frustrated in London, like what are you doing? I want to know your secrets. I want to know what's going on, because I'm born and bred Londoner and I've been frustrated since I was born.
since birth.
That's the London look right there.
Yeah, I mean, we've had no dickheads yet, but that could all change today.
Hello.
With that in mind, time to welcome today's guest, who is actually as far away from the D word as possible. But who knows, under the pressure of being with Wayne today. This guy has worked in the music industry for years, whether he is fronting Britpop band Ballroom back in the 90s, absolutely love their songs, or DJing popular venues in Camden with legends including the likes of the amazing Amy Winehouse, throwing his own bloody festivals, including the famous Camden Crawl, and most recently working to save live music venues. And he's just generally really got his hands dirty in the music industry. So it's my absolute pleasure to welcome Mr. Gary Flosser.
Good afternoon.
How are you feeling?
I'm good. I enjoyed our brunch before this.
Oh,
I'm feeling nice and full. Ready for chats.
Yes. I mean, Gary's done a lot. I kind of feel like, would he have a lordship? Or should I call you Sir Gary Prosser by this point?
Your grace would be fine.
Your grace. You got that, Wayne?
Yeah, I've got that.
Is that cool?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So this morning we had mimosas.
We did.
Which is lovely.
Yes. I'm not normally a midday drinker, to be honest. I always find myself falling asleep in the afternoon, and then you never get the evening sorted out, do you?
That is true. Unless you just power through.
Yeah, yes. I'm too old for that now.
And it just ends badly.
Yeah, it does, invariably. All the good nights do.
So, should we get down to business?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Music is evidently a massive part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Was this something that was passed down to you, or you kind of taught yourself, and did you discover music on your own?
Well, I've got a twin brother, and we were always interested in music at school, and we had little bands when we were growing up, 15, 16 stuff, and then we both went to university in Manchester, got into a band, and we put a demo together. I got lucky.
Yeah.
We had a few labels come up, but we got hit on by Nude Records, which was my favourite label, which was Suede's label, and they gave me a development deal and paid for my singing lessons. And
that's pretty cool.
And rehearsal. So I got really lucky, and I do respect any artist how hard you have to work to get to where you want to, but there is an element of luck involved, and I got a little bit of it, but. And then I joined the band and moved down to London, and the band took off, and as it does, ran its course, and then just continued in live music promoting and whatnot, and finding myself here now with a beer company. Very strange.
Do you remember your first ever gig?
Yes, I do. It was in Salford. My brother put it together for me.
Nice.
And I was absolutely sweating buckets, and I don't remember any of it. I just remembered, pal. just bowling on stage, literally went past, felt like, you know, 15 seconds. But for some reason, I must have liked it, because I did about 300 after that. So.
And who are your idols as a teen?
As a teen, yeah. Heroes.
Morrissey
was always a band. I mean, I'm a, such a melody lyrics man, and his lyrics touch me in such special ways. Mm. And I was a big Suede fan, and that was a big influence on the band. I love the look as well, the David Bowie thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty good people. I've got a very soft spot for David Bowie. But also, Suede, once it comes on, it's one of those tracks you can't turn off. You've got to listen to it the whole way through.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in love with that band. I don't think I've ever been in love with any woman as much as I was with Suede.
with your band Ballroom, so you did TV performances and interviews,
yeah.
Which back in the day, it's kind of a lot harder than it is now, because you've got to get to the big guys, whereas now you can just put it on the internet.
Yeah, there's more exposure for bands now, so that doesn't necessarily make success being easier. It's just there's a lot more out there. There's a lot more stuff to absorb, a lot more platforms to get your music out there, which is great. But it's a standard thing. It's hard work. It's committing to the job and treating it like a full-time job. Yeah. You can't just do a couple of gigs a month and think I'm in a band. It's a 60-hour week, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
You've got to do everything. You've got to write. You've got to manage yourself. If you're not managed, you've got to take look after every aspect of what it takes to be a successful artist.
Mm. And it's funny though, the amount of people that I meet in the pub that say they're in a band and they've not even had a gig yet.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got the look together. They're just throwing things out windows already.
Yeah, yeah.
But with regards to being a front man. Did you ever get, well, you just said actually that you got super nervous, but how did you get past that, like, anxiety? Do you just kind of have to throw yourself into the moment?
Well, alcohol was the thing, because this is, it's always riders for bands. It's a big issue at the moment. I'll come back to what your question, but it's in terms of what you're talking about in terms of mental health, it's a big issue with us at the moment as the promoters and venues providing massive riders in terms of bottles of Jack Daniels and cases of beer, just enabling, you know, bands to drink.
Yeah.
And it's something we want to really detract from providing bands too much alcohol, because it is causing a problem. And there are lots of cases of depression and suicide and big mental health problems in the music industry connected with artists. So it's something we are very, very aware of and trying to do something about. But for me, the nerves, you just have to pull through it. You know, you get through the first five shows, you know, and then it feels a bit easier, feel more confident, and you start enjoying it. But there's a point where it crosses over, and then if you're lucky, when you see, at this one point for me, when you see your fans singing your songs back to you, that's a moment where you go, yeah, that's it. I could stop now, and it's gone full circle. So that was a great moment.
Is it quite reminiscent of that when I get excited when we're on a night out and I put Ballroom on and sing every single lyric?
Yeah, yeah.
In your face.
I should just charge you 30 pence every time you play it to avoid the PRS.
Also, with things like anxiety, I don't know if you guys feel like this as well, but I seem to be getting more anxious the older I get, and I don't know whether it's because I'm not as naive and I'm more aware of things, or is it a pressure of becoming a full-time adult, or do you ever get those?
Well, I think it's that, it's the ignorance is bliss thing, isn't it? The more you know, the more you worry about, and, you know, that comes with age. Mind me, I'm 45 this year. I never thought I'd ever get that old.
Well, I didn't
or the
know
concept
that.
Of being it. There's a sense of mortality as well, and, you know, taking care to enjoy the moments more and the time in your day.
Yeah.
That's something I've been concentrating more on.
What about you, Wayne?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know. It's always interesting to me, because it's just, I don't know, so much of my 20s was dedicated to just doing this one thing of, like, being a primary carer to my nan.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was very much from 17 to maybe about 24, it was just caring. And then when I stopped being a carer, it was very much like, oh, so how do I live my life now? And it was very much, the anxiety for me was more about, like, oh, so I have missed out on so much that so many of the people around me had done, lived a life, done this, done that, you know, been in relationships, been out of relationships. And by the time I had sort of come out at the end of the whole Kieran thing, I was kind of back at square one where a lot of people had sort of started off when they were 17 or 18. I was like, oh crap, like, what do I do now? Like, and so the anxiety for me was sort of like, there was always a desire to, I have to catch up on everything. It was almost like these last 3 or 4 years was very much the cliff notes section of my life, where I was like, okay, what have I missed? How do I do anything? How do I function? You know, and it was weird to me because it's kind of like, I've been taking care of a life, but now I've got to take care of my own life, and I am just so ill prepared for it. And it's just like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And so it would just be, I'd be so anxious about, like, I'm running out of time. And then obviously I got to a point where I was like, that's ridiculous. I'm not even 30. So it's just like, I need to calm down. So it's like, but yeah, it just, I don't know. You just kind of have to realize that you just got to take it one day at a time and just keep on pushing forward. So
absolutely.
You were a DJ for many years and you put on some awesome nights, which I attended. And friends come and have a drink and a dance, but sometimes you wake up and maybe you're not, you know, in the mood to be sociable and stuff. How do you get through that without cancelling the event? And how do you, because it's quite tough for mental health sometimes if you're not in the right headspace.
Yeah,
to do things like that.
Well, it was when we started DJing at Proud. It was for fun. It wasn't really about the money. It wasn't about business.
Yeah.
We did generally enjoy getting our mates over to the club and having a dance, and then slowly, as we started doing other promotions, it turned into a business and a serious business. So we did have to treat it more seriously. But then, you know, it changes. You know, the nature of the night isn't just about getting your mates down and getting really drunk, although most of the times we did. But in terms of mental health, how it relates to that, you've just got to be, you're in a nightclub, you know, and alcohol's around.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a decision to make of, you know, you're surrounded by people who are drinking, and you know, if you don't get involved, that's fine. But you invariably do, because it's the nature of, you know, the environment.
Yeah.
But it's with what you're talking about with mental health and live music and the club scene, it's, you've got to be really strong to work in it if you want to retain any stability in your mind.
Good word.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's the same for festivals as well, because you've set up a few of your own and put on your own.
Yeah, well, now Fight Back, which is the fundraising arm of the Music Venues Trust, we put on festivals, city festivals. So the Music Venues Trust is a charity that protects and secures live music venues, grassroots live music venues. We have about 500 throughout the UK.
Mm.
And Fight Back was launched to fundraise for the charity. So now we do these regional festivals. We've got Fight Back Brighton coming up, for example, on the 22nd of April, and it's a 2-week festivals, and we have 19 venues involved, and it's about 150 shows, and it's a city unifying event. So we bring all the local music venues together. We're working with BIM College, with the students. They're going to be creating some shows, promoting some shows. We're working closely with a tourist board, and it's all about live music, and it's about drumming up interest locally to go, okay, these venues are there, get down there, support them, you know, go and see a band. You know, people walk past these venues every day and sometimes don't even know they're there. Just chance your arm, go in and have a look, check out some music. You know, you may find something you'll love and fall in love with for the rest of your life, you know. So that's what we're trying to do, and it's worked out really well. We've done events in Manchester, London, we've just done Bristol, and we're looking at Plymouth and Scotland, and we're being approached now to ask to do these things, because it has had a positive effect on the cities we've worked in.
Good. I mean, as soon as you start getting approached, you know you're doing something right, don't you?
So, when the phone starts ringing.
Yeah. in regard to Fight Back, do you want to tell listeners exactly what it is and how it got started in the first place?
So the charity doesn't run itself, the Music Venues Trust, and we get some government support from it, but there was a need to get some funding in to keep it running, because we we employ a few people as a core team, but we also employ a lot of advisors and lawyers who help music venues out with legal issues and planning and business rates, etc. So that costs money. So that's why we set up Fight Back. Mm-hmm. And so the first show we did was at the Roundhouse in November 2016.
Talk about going in strong, Roundhouse. First show.
Well, we had our Venues Day event there, which is where we get all the grassroots music venues together.
Yeah.
We have panels and we'd sit and talk. When we had the venue in the evening, so I thought, sod it, let's do a show. And we booked it without any bands. And we put it out there going, right, if you want a gig, you're going to have to get involved. And we ended up with 19 bands over three stages. And we had everything, public service broadcast and Ed Harcourt on the main stage. It just was nuts. And that was a really good night. And after that, we've done lots of one-off shows. But the problem with that is it's very time, takes a lot of time to put a single show together with not necessarily that much return.
Yeah.
So we thought, let's do these festival events and bring in lots of venues and do lots of shows. And then you can monetize it a lot better. And there's much more sponsorship opportunities, more lucrative stuff you can do with it. So yeah, that brings us pretty much up to date.
And so how exactly does the funding work from the beer to helping the venue?
So we thought another way, how can we monetize the fact that we've got 500 venues? Well, there's a really simple way to get around that. They all drink beer. So we approached a few brewers and we end up going with a brewery in Manchester called Shindiga, who's made us a really lovely pilsner. It's still IPA notes on it. Look at me pretending I'm a beer expert. But I tell you, one thing we could do. We could try it right now.
I bought
a can with
this.
Me. Should I quickly grab it?
Yeah, totally down for this. Live action, guys. Sound effects.
So do you want to describe what the can looks like?
Wayne?
Yeah. It's yellow, like it's got a sunshine kind of vibe to it. Yeah.
Fist
like
with a mic.
Fist with a mic. Very revolutionary.
It's powerful.
I like it a lot. Nice, nice. Really nice.
Are you ready for this, Kelly?
Oh, yeah.
You've got to be absolutely honest.
Yeah, first.
Okay, well, you know.
First taste this on the show. Kelly Ooh. Is.
You hear the bubbles.
You don't drink, do you, Wayne?
I don't drink.
More for me.
See, but I can't hide my facial expression, so.
Right, cheers. Yep.
Chin.
Yep. Oh.
I just got a load. Wait.
They both look very refreshed, just for our audience. They both.
Oh, it's quite
refreshed.
Light, isn't it?
It's very drinkable.
Oh my god, that's dangerous.
Yes.
Ooh, I like.
Cheers.
Chin.
And that, guys, was our first taste test on the show.
Yes.
More to come.
www.fightbacklager.com.
Oh, we're doing promotions now as well.
Breaking new ground.
So obviously, Fight Back Beer is there to help save all these venues.
Yes. Yeah, so the beer a percentage of all the sales goes straight as a donation back to the Music Venues Trust, and we're selling it in cans and kegs, and we're UK wide. We're in Blackpool, Manchester, Bristol, Brighton, going into the Windmill later this month, Brixton Windmill in the Boardwalk. It's just slowly pushing out there, looking at festivals as well. We've just got into Glastonbury. I can't tell you too much details about it, but we have our beer has presence there, which fingers crossed may be a free ticket as well.
Wow.
You'd think
reason.
So, wouldn't you?
And so how long ago did you start this again and you're already getting into Glastonbury?
The beer we launched in October last year.
That's amazing.
I've got a really good team. There's three of us, and Denzel has worked heavily in marketing, and Rich worked with Carling and basically set up the Premier League sponsorship, so he's got big knowledge of beer, so they know what they're doing. And it's, and we're not pushing it too hard. We're easing into the market. It's a really tough market, beer market, because it's owned by the likes of Carlsbergs and Heineken. So we've got to be really careful the way we play it. But it's a learning curve for me. You know, I've only got into the business 6 months ago, but I'm loving it.
Yeah, I mean, surely, you know, when most people hear about this beer, I'd be surprised if anyone really said no, because surely it's a great thing to have in your pub.
It's been well received.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's on the business side. A lot of venues are tied to a brewery or a company, so yeah. That restricts how what they can put behind their bar.
Yeah.
But there's ways around that.
Yeah. So in regards to, you know, all these music venues shutting down, how do you think that this will affect future generations? Because I just kind of feel like it's cutting off like people's creativity and stuff. They can't, you know, get on stage and stuff.
I mean, the bottom line is these, the Adeles, you know, the Ed Sheerans, they start at grassroots music venues. And if you don't have grassroots music venues, you don't have headlines at Glastonbury. And that's literally the route. That's the way it works. And when you lose these venues, particularly in small towns like the Harlow Square, for example, which is the only venue in that area where a band or local band's artists can play, if you lose that venue, you lose the whole culture of a town. It all falls apart. The rehearsal rooms close. The whole culture of music completely implodes. Yeah. So it has massive effects. And the struggle is, at the moment, particularly in the UK, is the government doesn't really support grassroots music. It's starting to happen now, mm-hmm. mainly because of the work of, the true heroes of the Music Venues Trust, Mark, David and Beverly Whitrick, have been talking closely with the government and making changes to the industry and starting this route of funding that we're going to be getting to stop these venues from closing. And we've lost... We managed to save 50 venues in the last 3 years. Uh-huh. But we, in the last 10 years, we've lost 35% of our music venues in the UK, which is shocking figures.
Yeah.
So that is significant losses.
Because you see all the gentrification, but you don't really take into consideration how many are being shut down.
Well, there's numerous reasons. I mean, business rates, the government have just put a business rates reduction on bars, but they haven't included live music venues, which is ridiculous. We're trying to fight that at the moment. Just the cost of running a gig is massive. And again, you've got developers, as you say, who are now looking at these venues in London. They don't see a music venue. They see 8 two-bedroom flats.
Well, yeah, because it's interesting to say, because I remember hearing the DJ Marshmello. Mm. He did a gig inside of a game.
Right.
So what?
He did a gig inside of Fortnite, and apparently it went down really well. And
he
so
did a gig via a computer game.
Yeah, so you could go to this venue where he was, where
a
the
virtual
Marshmello,
venue.
Yeah, 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 where the Marshmello avatar was playing
wow.
a set there, and it was just
awesome.
Like, yeah, it's like, that's pretty insane.
That's mental.
I'd virtually stage dive.
Yeah.
Just go crashing into your washing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, because sometimes I often wonder when it comes to music, it's just like, especially working in the industry, technology moves at such a rapid
yes.
pace these
yeah,
days.
It does.
It's just like, you know, one day CDs and MP3s are all the rage, and now it's literally the streaming services just took over overnight.
Oh, yeah,
and that's
yes,
just like,
yeah, killed it.
Yeah, it's just kind of crazy, especially like sort of dealing with revenue and stuff like that, and sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
figuring out how much is an album or music actually worth nowadays, realistically. So it's kind of a bit crazy.
I've got quite a romantic notion of what an album is to me.
Go on.
When you release an album, we've got the albums we love, and it's a story, isn't it? It's
yeah.
like 10 tracks. And the whole notion of me of going on to iTunes to buy one track of an album is like putting a chapter out of a book. It's like, an artist, when they put an album together, they want it to be to tell a story. Mm-hmm. You know, when you record them, you put your tracks together, you put them in a specific order for a reason.
Mm. Do you remember as well, back in the day at Woolworths, when you'd buy a single and stuff, but then you wouldn't hear anything of the album until about a month or so later.
Mm, mm.
So you'd only get sneak peeks of
yeah,
things.
Yeah, yeah, the tasters.
And then for the full story, you buy
yeah.
the album.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, like, man.
Like I said before, I'm really into rap music, so I was sort of trained in the notion of I never buy tracks, it's only ever albums, and to the point where I don't even want to listen to a single unless I hear it in an album, because funnily enough, Kendrick Lamar, when
yeah.
he released To Pimp a Butterfly,
yeah.
I remember I had heard a couple of singles in it and I was just like, I'm not really feeling them. And then when I finally listened to the full album, I was like, it makes sense because he is telling a story from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And so you're right. Like, I think albums are stories to some extent.
Totally.
So yeah. No,
it's absolutely right.
Yeah. Keep down the life.
So you've got a lot of support from venues and friends. Mm-hmm. What about artists? Because I know you said that people like Everything got involved.
Well, we've got numerous patrons who give their time for us and openly support Music Venues Trust. So we've got our main patron's Paul McCartney.
What?
Which is always a nice one to have.
Sorry.
Holy crap.
We've got Frank Turner's, or goes downhill from here. And so we've got Frank. I should have ended with Paul McCartney and start. No, I'm not young. So we got Frank Turner, Idols, Enter Shikari, Benin City, and if you go on musicvenuestrust.com, you can see our pages there. But yeah, I've done some shows with Frank Turner. He's a heavy supporter of Music Venues Trust and live music in general.
Mm.
He's very active. But yeah, we're not short of interest from the industry that wants to get on board. We also do these T-shirt signature series ones where we get the artist to write their lyrics and sign it, and we sell it to we put it out to their fans.
So there's like a limited amount.
Yeah, like so. For example, Frank did, I think 200. Madness did 200 as well. They're very good very lucrative for the charity.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is badass. I can't believe it started last October.
Well, the beer started last October. Fight Back started as the fundraising arm probably January last year. So
that's still not a long time. That's only over a year. I'm very impressed.
Properly started. I mean, we were doing the shows in like November, like 2016, but the properly let's make this a fundraising cause was, the beginning of last year.
I love it. In regards to that, so you've got the T-shirt series, the beer.
Mm-hmm. The gigs.
How else can listeners get involved and really help? What else can I do?
Well, you can donate on the Music Venues Trust page, musicvenuestrust.com. There is a donation. You can also, if you're an aspiring promoter, if you're in your local town, if you want to put on a gig, you can contact me. I guess there'll be contact details on this webpage at some point.
Yeah.
And if you want to put your show on or do some sort of night involving live music where a donation can come back to the charity, that'd be awesome. And we have a set of tools we can send you called Gig in a Box, and it's all the promotional tools you need to put on a gig, and that's right, how to write a press release, how to promote your show online in press, and everything that leads up to getting the band on stage.
That's amazing, because so many people want to get into music and go to uni, and that you've basically given them what they need in order to be a promoter.
Absolutely.
And, but most people kind of teach themselves.
There's a lot out there to read, and and to learn of how to make it in this industry, but the best way to do it is just to get out there and do it.
Yeah.
I don't knock university courses or courses that are around live music and music management, etc. But I'd argue that I'll take that 30 grand investment into a degree, and I'll just invest it in myself and go and put some shows on and get on with it.
Get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
For coming on. Did we cover everything? Is there anything else?
Yeah, we're pretty. I feel I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. Get me out of here.
I'm just gonna have another sip of Fight Back Lager.
It's pretty good, guys. I am a fan.
We're gonna go retail soon. So if you go on fightbacklager.com, there'll be a button to order it to your house. Not on the same night, but it turns up in a couple of days.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And do you want to help us with a question that's been sent in?
Yeah, go on. I'll give it a pop.
Another one.
Ready, mate? Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I've got a list now.
Oh, wow.
We've been sent in a fabulous question, and it's very relatable as well, from Alex Burt.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, what do you do when somebody tries to undermine you at work or takes credit for something that you did? It's a tough one.
The obvious thing is to rise above it and walk away.
But what if it's repeatedly happening? Repetitively? How do you say it?
If it's happening all the time?
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
So you don't want to seem petty.
Yeah. I would run it by my friends, people you trust.
Yeah.
And get an opinion.
Yeah.
And then address it directly. Because if it is affecting your life, you've got to attack it head on.
And what about taking it higher, maybe as well?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, when it comes to sort of stuff like that, like, you know what that idea is best, and obviously you're the person who came up with it, so you're the originator.
Yeah.
And eventually they will be found out. So me personally, I would just be like,
you do you.
Have it.
There you go. We're here for you guys.
We are, man. We are.
So until next time, it's goodbye from Gary.
Thank you.
It's goodbye from Wayne.
Bye.
And goodbye from me.
Bye-bye.
See you soon.
See you later, guys.
Can you stop? Remember when I told you that I have an anxiety issue?